you're not mentally tough, you can't play in that program. It'll destroy you.
Just before you go to bed tonight, you can watch this too. This is pretty nauseating.
When Belichick would come and do video for the quarterback room, it was all the bad quarterback plays.
Not even close to being able to complete this pass.
You can see everybody kind of squirm in their seat like, oh God, I hope he doesn't show that play. One time, I don't see a corner blitz, and I get absolutely annihilated in my back. Boom! Belichick comes in and he says, Castle, you know, can we figure out the corner blitz? Because I don't want to have to write your mother a letter that says, Dear Mrs. Castle, we're sorry to inform you that your son is dead because he's a dumbass and didn't see the corner blitz.
Welcome, 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 welcome. And are you ready for some football? It's Best Film Ever. My name's Ian.
My name's Ryan.
And I'm Herman.
And we're doing Dissecting the Dynasty. Third down. Week 3 of 5. What do you do on 5? You'll find out. All right. So, usually we do films over here at the BFE, but today we're continuing our episode by episode breakdown of Apple TV's Dissecting the Dynasty over on Apple TV. And I'm joined by two of our friends of the podcast. We got from his own couch, we've got the cool cat himself, Ryan. And from the Scuttlebutt podcast, we got Hermes Auslander. You want to talk about your pod a bit? I've been terrible and not even thrown to you the first couple of weeks.
Oh, that's because it's just a gossipy podcast, not worth much, not very on track or topic oriented. We're all over the place. We're a bunch of drunken sailors, but I appreciate it, Ian. I like discussing football and some movies over on your pod.
Whatever a pitch is, that was the opposite. That was a catch. That was a catch. It wasn't a pitch.
Well, I have a guy for that. You know, we all serve our own little purpose on the pod. I just edit and I make sure the sound quality is good. Everybody, I have a business guy and I have a chaos guy. They do their parts.
Yeah. So there we are. Let's go ahead. We'll jump into episode numero cinq, as the French would say, because they're big American football fans. As we go into the huddle here for season one, episode 5, Torn, brought to you by the dulcet tones of Natalie Imbruglia. Anybody? I don't even have it written down. It's just whatever. But are you guys too young to know Natalie Imbruglia?
I know the song.
Yeah,
I am.
Oh, really? Nothing's right. I'm torn. I'm all out of faith. No, just me. This is how I feel.
Oh, I recognize the song, yeah.
I'm cold and I am ashamed. Yeah, it's Natalie Imbruglia, Torn. Big song. Big song. Not originally her. It's a cover. Most people don't know that. Let's go start the episode off. And I'm, because I'm torn, I don't want to go back to this, because we're going back to Super Bowl 42. And my first note says, do I really have to watch this again? But yes, one more time, we have to watch the helmet catch. And we have to watch Eli and the Giants celebrate. And Tom says, this is Tom Brady, by the way, I'm on close personal first name basis with the guy. Tom says, losing this was devastating. Quote, what the fuck? How'd we lose? If there was one game in history I'd change, it'd be that game. But we can't change it. And we sort of suggested earlier, Ryan, is this the hardest of all the Super Bowl losses? I think the most recent one, whenever that is, each one when the new one comes along becomes the hardest of the Super Bowl losses. But maybe we'll revisit that as we go through.
It's that short-term memory.
Yes.
the last one is always the worst.
On to Cincinnati. And so we said, what you learn about life, this is still Tom Brady, what you learn about life in football is that you never have it quite mastered. It was a tough lesson for me to learn. And we go to 2008 training camp, and Bill Belichick, you kind of think he would go, forget about these 16 wins, it's a new season. But he goes, don't forget those 16 wins. I've been 5-11. I've been 7-9. Those are the seasons you can forget. Let's not forget 16-0. And we get the season opener versus Kansas City. And for my money, I think this is our first appearance of Wes Welker in the slot.
Yes.
What was your take on Wes Welker?
As a player?
Sure. Well, as a drinking buddy, if you have that story lined up too, go for it. But
I always liked Wes Welker. He was such a great slot receiver, and I was surprised he wasn't in this series earlier, like that 07 team.
Yeah,
because they brought Moss in, but they also brought Welker in. He had the deep threat, and it had the best like slot receiver.
Oh, see, that was the thing, because when Moss leaves, which you know we won't talk about, because this thing didn't talk about it. But that begins when the Patriots became the death by a thousand cuts team. And there was no better, and which kind of remains who they are for the rest of Brady's time with the Patriots. It's never the big play. It's just we're gonna throw 14-yard passes down the field. And I think they figure that out really the first go around with Wes Welker. I loved Wes Welker. How can you not? He's such a little guy.
I did too until he betrayed us and went to Hermes' team.
Went to Miami, didn't he?
No, he came from Miami. He went to Denver.
Oh, sorry. My bad. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. All the stuff I try and get away with is just flying from the hip. Ryan's very, very good at keeping me in check. So there we are. So then if you went to Hermes' team, I got to ask Hermes. Hermes, Wes Welker, thoughts?
I mean, similar to just echoing Ryan, I thought he was going to show up sooner than he did. And so when he did, I was like, that's my – once all the names sort of came together, I was like, that's like my idea of the – big bad Patriots is Welker and Moss and Gronk, like all of them put together in the episode. I was like, that's the Patriots I remember.
I mean, you can call it a dynasty, but this is kind of like second wave, isn't it?
That's what they frame it, or, you know, that's what they state it as here. Yeah. But even still, it was, I don't know, is you had to become the I guess part of the dynasty is the second wave, surely, but you had to sort of become that, you know, three out of four or whatever for you to really, I don't know, be that presence. And also all of the seasons they did outside of just the Super Bowls, they were still a menace regardless of whether they were winning that year or not, you know, winning the Super Bowl that year or not. They were always beating, like I said, my team and every team that I cared about. So yeah.
The enemy's always at the gate. You know what I mean? Like, we might have always come in, but we're outside. Tom says there was a lot of players back in 2008, so he thought this was a redemption year, and he's motivated, he's psyched up, and he gets, I mean, we talked about a low hit earlier, Ryan. He gets hit real low here.
Oh, yeah, definitely a hit that's illegal now.
Yes, absolutely. Pretty much probably for this reason, because it knocks Tom Brady out for the year. Tom talks about that his goal and how he proved his toughness was that he always got up first, because I don't want the other players to know it hurt, but he couldn't get up first this time. And Tom's sister, they lean on Tom. I imagine if Tom was still married, this would be the Giselle spot. But whenever they want to garner sympathy, we get Tom's sister, who tells us he's had lots of injuries he's played through, but this one's different. And after the game, Belichick says Tom Brady plays one position, and now somebody else will play that position. And sports radio's going nuts. Tom's out for the year. And Robert Kraft says, I was impressed they kept this in. He says, I went and visited him. Tom was a young man sobbing.
So I was at the stadium for this game. And I was working outside of the parking lots before the game. And I would come into the stadium right as the game started. So by the time I got into the stadium, Tom was already hurt. So I go in the stadium, someone's like, yeah, Tom is out. He's hurt. And there's this weird ear, like, all around, like, the stadium, like, this weird feeling. Like, they end up winning this game. But even after the win, you know, you're excited, but, like, you just feel everyone's kind of like, what's going on here? Like, what's up with this? It was a win, but it was a loss.
Oh, absolutely. The loss far outweighs the win here. Tom wanted to put a brace on it and fix it after the year. I did not know this was I never heard about this. And we see footage of him doing this very thing, but he gets the thumbs down. And the story's told to us by Randy Moss, who I'm glad they got in here for a couple more sound bites this week. Robert Kraft thinks that Tom Brady was worried because, look, it's kind of like if you start a relationship where you steal someone else's girlfriend and then going, now I'm terrified she's going to do the same thing to me and she's going to cheat on me with someone else. Because Brady seems to be worried that Belichick will replace him. You know, who's the most recent guy? He did it to Drew. Why wouldn't he do it again? Which I think actually opens up a great narrative for the second half of this series. Excellent. I agree. Thank you. Tom Brady Sr. says the same thing, and we get replays of Drew Bledsoe getting knocked off his perch as well. And they bring Drew back to talk about. I thought this was fantastic to bring Drew back into the studio spots right here. And Bledsoe says, hey, look, Tom's going to be thinking, I can never come off the field, because if I do that, the next guy might already be waiting in the wings. And who better to tell us that story than the guy it happened to? And so I think that's going to play in a lot when we get to Jimmy Garoppolo in a bit. Bill Belichick talks about how backups can lead teams to championships, and he names some specific guys, including Tom Brady. And then the camera pans to Matt Castle. And we meet Matt Castle, who hadn't started a game since high school. Ryan, as I'm going to make you my football expert here.
Yeah.
How does he make the league? Explain this one to me.
Still not sure.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing he just had good skills that an NFL team thought would translate eventually.
Like, I think famous
opportunity at college.
I think famously Tom Brady wasn't even the starter at Michigan, but he still got drafted or some story like that.
Yeah, I know with Tom Brady, it was like the first Michigan coach he had was playing. He'd play like one starter for one half, and then he put Brady in the second half. Like,
yeah,
game. That was like a strategy.
That was the strategy. So he got enough eyes on him. But I don't know how this happens, but sports radio starts asking now, hey, we're going to find out how much of this was Tom and how much of this was Bill Belichick, which is weird because you listen to sports radio now and that narrative's completely on its head. And so we get his first matchup, and it's against the Jets. And Matt Castle tells a story that Bill Belichick told him. Matt, we're not bringing anyone else in. You're going to be there. Whether it goes badly or it goes well, the one thing you can be sure about is you're staying in there. Which caused me to realize why Mac Jones played so many games for the Patriots this year. Because this is what Belichick does. I got absolute faith, which is great when it pays off. Makes for a hard season when it doesn't.
He wasn't totally faithful to Mac Jones at the end.
Oh, how could you be? Matt Castle goes 16 for 23 for 165 yards. So very similar to Brady's first game. He just kind of game manages them to a win. And the other guy, the guy he beat, a little known Jets quarterback named, anyone happen to pick up what that guy's name was?
Mm-mm. No.
Brett Favre, am I saying this right? Explain to me, just on behalf of all Canadians, how is it Favre and pronounced Favre? I just want to know that. How did the R come before the V in the pronunciation?
No idea.
Yeah, just saying. Bill Belichick says to Castle, look, we know you haven't started the game since the fucking seventh grade, but you started one today. And then we go against the Bills. Belichick says, look, the secret is you modify the game to the player's strengths. And before we hit the button, actually, Hermes and I were talking a little bit about what it's like to be in positions of somewhat of management. And I think this is just a good management technique, full stop, is go, what is that person good at? I'm going to make them do more of that. What is that person bad at? I'm going to make sure they don't do as much of that, or I can develop that. But at the very least, I'm going to try and mitigate for that fact and put them in positions where they can succeed rather than fail. Am I wrong here, Hermes?
No, I mean, and that's something that I thought was well, like, it was well explained and it displayed really well in this episode specifically. And again, being someone who's not, you know, following the Patriots as, you know, closely as probably you guys are, it's really easy to overlook something like that. But I mean, because I don't remember Castle at all. I remember little bits of Brady being hurt, but you know, the big baddie is Brady. So to see Castle step in there and then Belichick like shift the way he did, that's, yeah, I mean, respect to Belichick that way.
So there's all these shots of Matt Castle running around. We get told by his teammates, man, he's like a gazelle. Brady's like molasses. He had 22 yards rushing that game. So they shoot him, Castle. So they shoot him like it's Justin Fields or Josh Allen running around. He had 22 yards rushing. It's not Anthony Richardson. He is not. You know what I mean?
Hey, but compared to Brady, who had 1,000 career yards.
Yeah.
That's a good day.
So Castle does go 22 for 32 for 234 yards. Nothing passing, but he does get the rushing touchdown. And Tom Brady Sr. starts talking about how Tom is vulnerable. How much of this narrative are we buying?
Oof. Now
he is the reigning MVP. He put up 50 touchdown passes the year before and led them to a 16-0 season. How much are we really buying? They're getting out on Tom. This the kid, and he's like 27. How much are we really buying this for a journeyman? He's not a young pup. For a journeyman, Matt Castle.
Okay. So this one is this one. I don't want to like bring it back to personal experience all the time. But I will say, as an NFL quarterback, I would assume. I mean, we brought it up with Bledsoe. It's like you'd assume you're in the best position to receive the best care, right? So, yep. In that respect, we've seen crazier injuries in the NFL. But that said, like the knee is so, as someone who's still rehabbing mine, it's such a rough injury. So if it was legitimately snapped or all the way through, I mean, again, the extent of the injury doesn't specify too much. I think it said it tore. I was like, but that's a general term in medicine. It's, I don't know, that could be a career ending thing is my point. So it's like, I don't know, but did I believe it as an NFL quarterback who's getting hundreds of million dollars? I don't know. I'm right there in the middle. I don't know. You know, I see your point, but at the same time, it's like, oof, I could see how it would have ended.
This guy's won 3 Super Bowls. Ryan, what's your thing on this?
No, I definitely get it. Like, there's always that fear you're not going to be back to where you were. You know, big injuries like that, like, you can come back from them. Maybe you don't always fully recover. You don't fully get your foot back.
This is 2008. How old are you here?
I'm 19.
Okay, so do you remember any of the scuttlebutt? Hey, look at that. Do you remember any of the scuttlebutt about this Castle? Should we keep Castle? Was anybody saying this?
No, nobody was
saying this. Okay, there we are.
Yeah.
Is this made easier, Hermes? I'll throw it back to you on this. Is this made easier by the fact that we know Tom's out for the year as opposed to Drew, who you had to make a decision on midseason?
In terms of like replacing him with Castle?
You don't have to make the decision until the offseason. So you can see how the season plays out. And then you can make an educated decision.
See, that again, as someone who's sort of outside of the whole Patriot loop, when I would have been terrified if I was Brady, you know, and especially if he did the entire season and then you're making the decision in the offseason. Like you said, Ryan, like maybe you're just that much, you know, a little bit slower. Maybe you haven't fully recovered. Maybe you still need another 6 months, you know, is going to be part or if not most of the next year. I would be terrified if I was Brady. So to make the decision right away, it going into the next year that, all right, good job, Castle, carrying us through that one, but Brady's back. Oh. I don't know. That was obviously they knew something I did or I wouldn't at that time. I don't know. That's tough. That's rough.
We do have a fairly recent example of this very situation playing out. Unfortunately against the Patriots, but Nick Foles was not the starting quarterback. You know what I mean? Nick Foles was not the starting quarterback, and he leads them to – I forget who he plays. But he leads them to a Super Bowl championship and then is traded the next year. So the starter can have his job back.
And that was a bad decision by Philly.
That's tough, yeah.
I got my quarterbacks mixed up for a moment. That was Carson Wentz, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I think he had better just keep it Nick Foles. Yeah, so but we have seen these sort of things play. So, yeah, I mean – now – the fun question is, if Castle leads him to a Super Bowl, maybe it's a different story then.
Yeah. So again, remind me, when did the Patriots season end for Castle's year?
I'll bring that up. We'll get there organically. Yeah. I guess this "oh yeah" thing, Ryan, is a Patriots tradition because we got how do we feel about Matt Castle as our starting quarterback? So apparently you have to ask a question that can end in "oh yeah." You can't be like, "What do you want for dinner?" Because that's not going to work here. It has to be a clearly binary yes no sort of response. Because they go, "Oh yeah," which we previously heard for how do we feel about Bill Belichick as our how do we feel about playing for Coach Belichick? And they did the "oh yeah" earlier,
right?
So Brady creates a severe infection because sure, yeah, he gets the surgery and then he tries to do too much. which is pretty much classic Tom Brady, I suppose. And Tom says, hey, this is a real hard time. I was really going through some low areas, but I had some great people there with me. And we meet maybe one of the last big figures in the series I was waiting to meet. I'm very glad to see him sit down in the chair. I didn't know what this guy looked like. I couldn't tell you who he was. But I did know the name, Alex Guerrero, Tom's personal trainer. Ryan, am I correct in thinking we're going to see a lot of this guy, I imagine, in the next couple of weeks?
Absolutely. I think he's going to play the big role in Brady and Belichick kind of going separate ways.
Yeah. Daddy doesn't love me anymore. I'll get myself a new daddy.
Yeah.
Alex recounts Tom thinking he might be done, and Matt keeps on winning. There's a game against Miami that they kind of yada yada over. He throws for 415 yards and three touchdowns. So, yeah, they and a rushing touchdown on top of that. So, yeah, they totally seem to find a way to success with him. And instead, we get this speech after the game where Belichick's just tearing him down, going, hey, you know, guys, we got to be better for this. And they've put up 48 points in the other guy's house, a division rival, and won by 20. And he's tearing them down. I do have in my notes, to be fair, Chad Pennington did throw for 300 on him that day. So there's something to be said about the defense not being what it once was. But Dante Stallworth's like, this is who he is. Most of the coaches in the NFL are coaching football. Bill's coaching warfare. And that's the perfect transition to get us to Annapolis, Maryland. Anybody ever been to Annapolis?
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah? I saw the movie there, the boxing one, where, you know, if they let James Franco go a couple more rounds, he might have won.
Wait, what?
Have you not seen Annapolis?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Is it Jamie Foxx? Is it Jamie Foxx and James Franco?
No, it's it's not Chestnut. Crap. I think it's Tyrese Gibson, if my memory.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah. And it's a. I really like a boxing movie. I'm not a big fan of boxing, but I really like a boxing movie. But yeah, it was okay. It was okay.
Yeah, maybe that's why I didn't get the reference right away. I would say it was a, you know, middle of the road, forgettable.
Yeah. Hey, I like Play It to the Bone, and Play It to the Bone's, objectively speaking, a terrible film. So what?
Never seen it.
Oh, Antonio Banderas and Woody Harrelson.
I like both of these.
I imagine it has not aged well. I can remember some lines that are in my head. It will not have aged well. So they have a Naval Academy there, and Bill Belichick grew up in the Naval Academy. And we get interviews with Bill Belichick's mother, but her interviews are different. Did you pick up what was different about her talking head segments?
I don't think it did anything different for his mother. I did write it down in the notes. Like, this was definitely I appreciated this little look at Belichick's history, especially like his football and everything. I thought that was really cool.
She's the only talking head to this point that hasn't taken place in the studio. They're at her house.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Which is great, actually, because it sort of domesticates Bill even a little bit more. She's not in the studio. She's not neutral. She's in this home. And Bill talks about the marriage of his military perspective on, you know, his job of being a football coach. And he said, look, it had influence on my life and my coaching career. And there's a sign outside the Patriots, one of the video rooms, I guess, by Sun Tzu. And it says, every battle is won before it is fought. I imagine you've read a book or done something with this already at some point, Herbie. Am I wrong?
I don't think so.
No. Oh, really? You strike me as into your sort of Eastern War kind of mythology.
I mean, outside of Art of War, no.
I was going to say, have you read The Art of War? That was my next question.
Oh, sorry. I was adjusting for a beer here.
That's fine. Have you read it? Yeah.
Yeah. I did it for school. I actually just ran into a guy who's reading it like recreationally. I was like, I think I need to revisit because I think I get more out of it now as a different appreciation as an older man versus being forced to do it in high school. But no, I've as far as Eastern War, or Eastern history, any of that, no.
Okay.
Not my, I'd say the Roman is as far east as I've ever gone.
I believe the Art of War was a book that Phil Jackson would make his team or his players read. Phil Jackson was big on every Christmas or every start of camp. I'm going to give you a book, and the book you got said something about you. So, yeah.
So wait, he made the whole team or just, or
I know the Art of War is one that he was kind of like on his like frequent gifting list or something like that, whether it was for all his coaches or just certain players, whatever, but he gave the Art of War out more than some of the others, but he gave these really thoughtful, he's just a big reader, which God bless him. I'm the head of an English department. I don't know the last time I read a book. So, you know, take that for what it is. Like,
Paul Giamatti in the holdovers.
Yeah, such is. Ryan, you ever read The Art of War?
I have not.
Are you a big reader, Ryan?
No, not these days.
I can't tell you the last time I read a book. I really can't. Yeah. One that wasn't for work? Nah. Nah.
Well, last book I read was that new Hunger Games book.
Recently. Oh, really? Yeah. I've got a book. I've got Matthew Perry's. Like, I'm not even talking like heavy books. I've got Matthew Perry's biography that I'm waiting to go back into. I've got a history on the sort of the official on author or whatever it is, the big new history of the MCU book I just picked up. I just can't. It's just such a commitment. I'm like, nah. That's like a 20-hour thing I got to do if I do that. I'd rather just watch another movie. That's good enough for me. Matt Castle talks about how tough you are to have to be to succeed in the Patriot program. And there's a great line. He tells this story about how he couldn't pick up the corner blitz. And he said, Bill comes up to me one day and he goes, you know what, Matt? It'd be really great if you could learn how to pick up the corner blitz, because I don't have to phone your mom and say, dear Mrs. Castle, we're sorry to inform you your son is dead because he's a dumbass and didn't see the corner blitz.
It's actually hard to do as far as, I mean, like, corners are so far out there to not, I mean, they always say it head on a swivel, but like, that one shot that they had of him getting creamed like that, I was just like, wow.
So help me out, because I've never played. When the corner is blitzing, is there any sort of chatter? Is someone shouting corner or something like that? So he should be excited to get that information, or is it just on him to pick this up?
It would depend on their defense, like what their coverage is or what their line is already doing, because a lot of times it'll either be picked up by the fullback or maybe even the tight end if you have one, or a guard, like if you have a pulling guard or something, usually picks up a lot of those like outside blitzes. But I mean, it's still at the end of the day, just like any other position, like you're the only one in there who can see what's like, you know, coming towards you, I guess, or like what's on the field in front of you. And as a quarterback, you know, you have the ball. I don't like, I've never played a quarterback position, so maybe it's harder than I thought, you know, maybe I can't turn my head all the way and see them. But I mean, Brady did a pretty good job of plenty of quarterbacks have kept their head on swivels before. So I don't know. Maybe Castle just really liked getting creamed sometimes. Right. That corner was really fast.
Ryan, have we talked about this? Have you played football?
I have not played football.
Okay, yeah. Just checking.
Yeah.
And so Teddy Bruschi says, hey, look, man, the Patriots life, it's a hard life to live. Playing for Belichick. He says, young guys, you know, the young guys who get upset, it's like, look outside the box. It gives this metaphor that he's a wet towel. And Belichick's the guy, and he's wringing him out. And everything that comes out, and it's not a perfect metaphor because it's leaving him in this metaphor, but apparently it's talent, all the talent. He's gonna wring all the talent out of you until you're dry, which could also be a metaphor. Bill will use every ounce of talent he's got out of you, and then he'll cast you aside. But the Patriots keep winning, and they end up going 11-5, Hermes. This is the answer to your question. So 11-5, and they don't make the playoffs.
Five, were those all Castle losses?
Yes, because Brady gets knocked out game one.
Oh, it was a game one. Okay. I can remember it was like 1-3. I knew it was like early. Okay.
No, it was the first game, yeah.
Dang. Okay.
So 11-5. I'm going to read you the entire list of 11-5 teams that don't make the playoffs.
Very long, I hear.
2008 Patriots, 1985 Denver Broncos. End of list. Like 11 wins. Like the last couple seasons, 7 wins has gotten you in from the NFC South, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's some ridiculous number, yeah. So like 11. Usually you get 10, you're all right, you're in. But to get 11 and not get in?
That team's the only 11-5 team to ever not make it, like after the NFL expanded to a 12-team playoff.
Yes.
Like the 85 Broncos, there was less playoff teams.
Yeah. It's absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, what's wild card cutoff? Isn't it like usually around like 8 or 9?
Well, the problem was the division winners all had kind of low records that year, so it meant the AFC East had 3 teams at 11-5 or better, and I think the Central had another one as well. So the Patriots just lost a couple of tiebreakers and stuff like that. So you go 11-5 and you lose.
Well, that's what, I mean, good riddance, because they'd done it too many times to the Denver Broncos.
Hey, you know what? We're acquiring some good karma. It's all that's happening here. As far as Patriots goes, these are the dark years. Sorry, year. Yeah. Oh, our team's brutal. Yeah, how'd you do? We went 11-5.
There it is.
Missed the playoffs. Got an artificially higher draft pick than we usually probably should have deserved for 11-5. But everyone keeps slurping Belichick, and some voiceovers say, hey, we're wondering about the supposed greatness of Tom Brady. And we hear one guy say, who's not going to look like that plan underneath Bill Belichick? And we freeze on a newspaper headline that says Matt Cassel proves that Tom Brady is a system quarterback. How great is the chatter about this, Ryan?
It's pretty high. I mean, I think from like week 2 when Cassel like stepped in, it's like, oh, see, all the Tom Brady doubters and haters, like, oh, see, like Tom Brady is nothing but a system quarterback. But my counter argument is always like, this team went 16-0 last year. You could have anybody as quarterback, and you'll probably be all right.
Yeah. Alex Guerrero talks about how the newspaper headlines and thinks that this is motivation for him and Tom. I mean, get shots of Tom working out and like delighted because he can push off his leg. He's like, I can do this all day. And Tom says, football is not a game of entitlement. Football is a game of earning it. And there's some great footage of the rehab. And he says, Alex, I can do this till I'm 50. It's pretty close. Pretty close. He gave it a go. Brady talks at this point. He says, then my focus became about being preventative. It's not about getting better and being reactionary in that regard. How do I stop the next break from happening? And so really it's about how long do I want to play? And Nancy Brady says, hey, he had his family and he had Giselle. And it's the one mention we've had of Giselle so far. And we get to the 2009 preseason and Brady is back. And Matt Cassel's traded to the Chiefs. And if I may, there's a slight hint here that Tom might be a little insecure. Because he had a 10-5. Hey, what's better than having, hey, let's have this guy just in case Tom can't go. But you trade him. And he goes to the Chiefs. Am I right on this one?
Yes.
And he actually does okay with the Chiefs for a few years, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets paid there, too.
He gets paid. I think he takes him to the playoffs. On one, he does okay for himself there. And we get Patriots versus Buffalo, first game of the season. And I love those red jerseys. As far as any alternate Patriot jersey goes, I love the red.
Oh, those ones are the best. Yeah. You need to wear them more.
Way better than the silver. I had my first Patriots jersey was a silver Tom Brady jersey because I lived in Canada, and the likelihood of coming across a Tom Brady jersey was not that high at that time. So I saw one and went getting it. And first game back, and Tom's throwing over guys' heads, and there's a great sideline conversation where I realize Tom Brady's register, his vocal register, is also really high because he's being asked. He's like, I put it right on his hands, and it's all right up here.
I was the only one that thought that.
Yeah, I was like, because when he's doing all these stuff in the studio, he's just really measured. But talking to Bill, I gave it to him in the gloves, and he goes, what about that other one you threw over his head? And he goes, oh, yeah, all right. but he then starts to step into it, and he has a good day. I looked it up. He threw for 378 yards that day, the day where he was throwing over guys' heads. 378, 2 touchdowns and a pick. What they gloss over is they get 2 scores in the last 2 minutes and 6 seconds to win the game. They come back from massively down. And he asks, how do you feel about a Monday night victory? And the boys go, oh, yeah. And there's predictions about making it to the Super Bowl. But it turns out the rest of the team isn't up to the same standard. And there's too many trades, we're told, and too many retirements. And the young guys won't buy into the Patriot way. And we even get this great 2-shot. And I was really surprised that we got this. They're on the sidelines, and Belichick's just burying the team to Brady, going, I can't get these guys to play the way I want them to play. I was like, he's not even going to try. He's like, I can't get them to do it. It's useless. There's no point. And Brady, I don't know what he wants Brady to say, because he's like, yeah, all right.
You think it was just like growing pains with, like, you know, getting that rhythm back? Because it's easy when everybody knows each other for as long as they do, and they find that flow as a team. And then you start switching things out, and obviously your lead quarterback goes out. I mean, maybe it's just a little growing pains you got to adjust to.
I guess a couple things. I think it's age, and I think it's a salary cap league. And I think those things require you to have turnover, because in order to hold on to your best players, you got to let some of them walk. And as a result, the guys who step up, there's a little bit of entitlement. We got Tom Brady, and they haven't had to work for it. They've been gifted into it. And, it depends who you're bringing in, which will be the focus of the next episode. But, yeah, I think the idea of it, winning begets success. It can also beget complacency.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. I think also what, like, they don't mention at all is, like, it is like transition period this whole year, like defensively. But like Belichick made some moves to help the future. Like when you trade Castle and Vrabel to the Chiefs, you got a pick, ended up being Patrick Chung. He wins 3 Super Bowls with the Patriots. He trades Richard Seymour before this year. They get Nate Solder, who's a big role in 2 Super Bowls. So like that, the future is being built. I feel like this was a very like transitional year, Brady's first year back.
And I think Bruschi's gone at this point.
Yeah, I think he retired right before the year
started. Yeah. So, yeah, because I think his last game is the – what was it? Is it – yeah, I guess it would be with Castle, wouldn't it? That would suck. Yeah, yeah. Last game's with Matt Castle. No respect to Matt Castle, yeah. But yeah. I'll say this. If that was the end of Teddy Bruschi on this series, I will miss Teddy Bruschi. I thought he was a really solid contributor throughout. So I really liked him the first 4 episodes.
He was great.
Yeah. We get to the AFC wildcard game. I remember this game. Oh, do I remember this game. And the Patriots just get, destroy. It's not even kind enough to be like a 50-7 like drubbing. It's just a complete, it's not that. At least that you can go, nothing went right for us. We were snake bit. This is just, they were clearly the second best team all day long. 33-14.
Yeah. I think the very first play of that game was like a,
yeah,
8-yard rush by,
we're not doing it,
Ray Rice, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And we hear a voice. I think it's Michael Wilbon who says, hey, is that the Patriots? Are they done? Is this over? And Brady's asked if this one got away from them in a way that wouldn't happened previously. And Brady at the mic kind of goes, without saying it, he kind of goes, yeah. Yeah, I think it did. And Ernie says, the focus is on, we got to draft some good players to turn this around. And that brings us to a 2010 draft. And Ernie says, we were looking for toughness, and we found a fourth rounder we liked, even though we had off the field issues. But the warning is, we didn't understand the full dimensions of what the problem was. And we get told in the fourth round, the Patriots select Aaron Hernandez. And we flash forward to him being led out of his house in cuffs and being charged with murder. As the talking head says, a lot of questions will be asked about what they knew then. And that brings us to halftime. So, Ryan, since I can see you, not that I can ever really see Hermes, but since I can see you in the state you're in, who's getting the game ball, buddy?
Go with Matt Castle.
Matt Castle? Hermes?
I like
oh, sorry, I mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Stories. Yeah, no, his interviews are nice. His stories were funny.
Yeah, I went with Castle as well, so there was nothing. No difference here.
This is so close to a Disney. I'm a Matt Castle as well. This is like a Disney movie. The day I woke up quarterback of the Patriots, right? That thing about how we focus on Bill and then we just pan over to Matt. And it's like, who, me?
And he's, I'm like, so sweet looking.
It's everything. A sequel. I saw the first one. I loved the first one. It had a way happier ending, though. You know what I mean? It's like the reverse Rocky. We got the happy ending in the first movie, and we didn't get the happy ending. We got like the moral happy ending in the second movie. But we really, yeah, another Super Bowl would have been nice. Who fumbled the ball? Who came off badly?
The only thing I got, probably the media.
Media? Okay.
Saying, yep, Brady's a system quarterback. It's all Belichick.
That's probably the best that I could have got, because I put when I was taking notes, I was like, question mark, because nothing really stood out to me this episode as someone who was particularly bad. I mean, next episode, I definitely have one, but
not one. I've got Bill Belichick, and I think it's because this – I think this sets up the entire – this is the beginning of the end. Despite the fact we're going to have Super Bowl wins, this is the beginning of the end. It's – you got to let someone know they're your number one girl sometimes. And I feel that Bill, he's doing what he's got to do in front of the team, but it seems like this sows the seeds of doubt in Brady that never, I think Bill's always got his eye on who's the next guy. I really do. And I think this makes Tom a bit skittish. If we believe a narrative presented by Tom and by Tom Brady Sr., I think this is the start of making him feel a bit skittish. Highlight of a night, best moment, best story.
It's definitely Matt Castle talking about the corner blitz with Belichick.
Okay.
And Belichick's telling him he'll have to write a letter home to his mom saying, your son's a dumbass and couldn't see the corner blitz.
Hermes?
Great shout, classic, but I got to go with Belichick's past. Seeing some of that old footage and everything for me was like, wow, that was, again, like I don't know how much of it has been public knowledge, but that was the first time I was seeing it, and it definitely, it was like immediately wrote it down. That's cool.
I'm going to go with Teddy Bruschi's wet towel speech and what it means to be a player for the Patriots and sort of checking your ego at the door a bit. Mainly because my Omaha soundbite is, we're sorry to inform you your son is dead because he's a dumbass and didn't see the corner blitz. That's my soundbite. Ryan?
I think was it Stallworth who said, most coaches are coaching football, Belichick's coaching warfare.
Good one. Good one. Mr. Osnider.
I liked he looked like a gazelle on the field compared to Brady.
Brady's molasses.
After he said his stats.
22 rushing yards.
It's even better now. Man, Brady must have been slow.
Oh, what was he called in the combine? Was it a baby giraffe they called him?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have the gazelle Matt Castle versus the baby giraffe Tom Brady. I don't know what's gonna be more depressing, Spygate, the loss of the perfect season, or this. Let's jump back in. Season 1, episode 6, At All Costs, and we meet Aaron Hernandez, not in the studio obviously, but there's a green screen of him as a rookie and says, I want you to walk up and give me a lot of attitude. And I guess he's gonna hold the shot so they can, like, you know, put all the graphics around him, so they need a nice long shot of him doing that. And then they do.
I do know what those graphics are for. I remember what those graphics are for.
Okay.
Because they would play them in the stadium after a big play. You just see a player come over and do that pose on the Jumbotron, or they try to get you hyped up and just be a player like doing a pose like that.
Excellent. And then they do one of him smiling, and he's like, "I like the smile." I'll tell you what, it's a disarming smile. Even knowing what I know, it's a disarming smile.
The complexity of people, isn't it?
Yeah, really? Yeah. It'd be easier if he walked up and said, you know, I hate babies or something like that. We'd be like, all right, I get this guy. He's just a villain.
Yeah, but yeah. It's never the case in real life, right?
No, and we meet, and man, some special shouts. I don't know if I finished my things. It'll be a short list. We meet Dion Branch. I think Dion Branch's story in this is really important because he seems to be the Chico Whisperer. Is how they presented him. Yeah. And he says, look, I hope people don't take this the wrong way. And he goes, look, you can only know what someone is to the core, and you can only judge them by what you see. And you take any walk of life where someone's ended up being something that you didn't think they were. Professional wrestling had it with Chris Benoit. The American football's had it here with Aaron Hernandez. But, you know, these individuals who pop up in society. And everyone always says, you know, that's not the guy I knew. The guy I knew was this. Because, like Hermie said, it's the complexity of people. And Dion Branch wanted to believe to, you know, what he saw in Chico. But he says, I still beat myself up for not seeing it. And he sort of stares off in the middle distance. And you can tell, like, he's haunted by this.
I can't imagine what kind of flack in his inbox might have looked like. I mean, just... like you said, just from how he appears, at least in this, yeah, I can't imagine.
So you think there'd be some backlash based on this?
Not necessarily from this. No. I just mean from him. Maybe he came again as a third party looking in on this and not being, you know, boots on the ground or anything during the time when this. I vaguely remember this too, the whole Hernandez thing. So to see it from this perspective, maybe he came out, you know, in support of him right away, you know, before charges were dropped. Maybe everybody knew him as his friend, you know. So I assume he got flack, or at least personally gave himself flack, as you see here in the interviews where he kind of like feels, whether it's guilt or whether he just, I mean, I don't want to ruin the Omaha later, but there's a couple things he says where it's like, wow.
June 16th, 2013, we jump up to that, and Aaron Hernandez is arrested. And we got told that Odin Lloyd was murdered execution style. And a news reporter says Hernandez might just be the first serial killer from the NFL. And we go back 3 years earlier, back to the draft, and we're told two things. Number one, this draft is really important. And number two, we got a haul. It was a good draft. And we meet Devin McCourty. I love Devin McCourty as a player. So
how could you not?
I think he's got like half a cross on. I imagine his brother must wear the other half. It looks like it's that.
Makes sense.
Yeah. McCourty says the first four or five picks set up the franchise for the next decade. And if I had been smarter, I would have written all five picks down, but I didn't do it. We do find out, though, that pick number 42 is a tight end they're not going to talk about too much this episode. Rob Gronkowski from Arizona. And we get our first meeting. I needed Rob Gronkowski's big, dumb, smiling face on my screen for this episode. I needed more of him, actually, during the episode, but he's not. And he tells this great story about how he gets this. So he gets the call. He's a Patriot. Great. And then he and his family get on the stage. His boys get on the stage. They do like some jumping thing. And I guess there must be delay in the draft to a certain degree or make it. But either way, he gets a phone call from Belichick and told, get off the stage. And he says, I've been a Patriot for 5 minutes and I'm already in trouble. And Belichick, it's a live shot of Belichick after he hangs up on Gronkowski going, Lord, have mercy on us. Are you familiar with the story, Ryan? I'm sure you are, about when they brought Gronk in for his pre-draft interview. Mm-mm. Ryan, if you know it, feel free to share it, buddy.
I don't know the whole details. Wasn't he like super thick? He could party and he was super hungover.
Yep.
Is that the story?
And so they leave him for a minute and they come back in to interview him and he's asleep on the floor.
This is gross.
And they still draft him. Look, and I think it's the first realization for Belichick that, yeah, there's the Patriot way. But then we see it a little bit here. There's sort of compromises you have to make when talent's there. In the case of Gronk, you overlook the guy sleeping on the floor. In the case of Aaron Hernandez, I think you got to overlook some other stuff. And so we're told by number 113 overall, Aaron Hernandez is drafted. And we're told by Jackie McMullen that other teams claimed that they had took him off their draft boards because they had concerns about his character. And Ernie Adams goes, look, we're getting first round talent for fourth round price. That's a pretty good deal. Oh, I mean, it's hindsight's 2020, isn't it?
Yeah, something this big too. But I mean, that's such a, I say it even now, that's such a tough position because they're running a business. This is what their livelihoods and millions of dollars are dependent on, making decisions like this. But then also there's this idea, like if we reduce things to numbers, stuff like this happens so frequently. It just keeps happening. And it's like, where is this line that we can draw? You know, cause like you said, Gronk, I mean, you could overlook someone maybe being a little less professional for the amount of talent they bring. But if there's significant problems, like through the previous, like schools and in college specifically, and draft picks weren't taken. I mean, yeah, you save some money, but man, like you said, though, that's hindsight. I mean, if nothing, none of that fallout happened, like we wouldn't be talking about it. So
let's not forget the Patriots took Randy Moss. Like Randy Moss is not Citizen of the Year when he arrives in Foxborough. And yet the Patriot way kind of rehabilitates him. So maybe there's some, what's it called? It's not pathos. Hubris. Maybe there's some hubris in going, hey, the Patriot way can rehabilitate anybody.
I do know for a lot of fans, that was their thinking about everyone, every problem player in the NFL. And our fans being like, Belichick can take him in, fix him, he'll be all right.
Because what is your precedent here? Randy Moss is a problem child. We draft him, go 16-0. Tom throws for 50. Moss catches 20. That sounds like a pretty good deal to me. And of course, everything we said about episode one, where we had that audience superiority, and it makes us go, oh, we are so clever. Look, we know Tom Brady's going to be. It actually kind of works in reverse here. We go to the Patriots. How could you? How could you do this? So,
I mean, is that the sentiment? Do either of you, especially as fans, share that sentiment?
I think Apple. I don't share a sentiment, but I think Apple TV wants me to go. You should have known better. Yeah. Apple TV suggesting the Patriots have some degree of knowledge. To some degree, we're enabling, and maybe knew more than they let on. That's the message I think Apple TV leaves us with. But I'm jumping ahead. But that's my right. I never blame the Patriots for this. But that was me.
No, Ryan? I'm with you. Like how Ernie M said, it was like first round talent at a fourth round price. And he's got to make those business decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where even with Apple, I would say structuring it that way, because I agree that's how they do it. And again, even as a third party, I didn't. I was like, there's no, come on. You can't.
You can't go thinking someone's going to be a murderer. You just can't enter your mind, right?
Yeah.
How many success stories are there of troubled, not just the Randy Mosses, but guys who just become regular guys, but they just figure it out when they hit the pros. They grow up.
Yeah. Or the discipline of being in that spot and everything else. You know, you got, that's like you said, that's your job every week.
Or worst case scenario, they crash out. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't even on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Hernandez's backstory, we find that his father dies when he's 16, and we get told by Robert Kraft his father kept him on the straight and narrow. I happened to hit his Wikipedia page earlier today. There's a lot of fighting and a lot of crime his parents are involved in during his formative years. So I'm not the straight and narrow narrative. I think Robert Kraft is telling him the story he's got to tell himself to go to sleep at night, because he's going to say some pretty out there things this episode.
Yeah. Got some notes on those.
Yeah. He punches a bartender, not Robert Kraft, but Aaron Hernandez, in college and gets in trouble. And what he learns, we hear from a teammate, is he learned you can get in trouble and not get in trouble. And we go to the rookie symposium, some of my favorite footage from this episode, where Chris Carter is trying to tell the rookies, look, I was cut because I was immature, and then I learned how to grow up. But you got to learn how to handle the money, because money will make you a worse version of yourself. It makes nobody better. And he says, look, if you like weed, if you like kush now, you'll get all the kush you want. And Aaron Hernandez is giggling like students I have at my school when I'm trying to tell them, hey, here's some bad stuff. They're like, that sounds great. And I'm like, oh, you're in the wrong mindset, guys. You're just not getting it.
But every youth is. I mean, come on. I love that this scene specifically for the episode, to hear like the wisdom and to see Hernandez in the crowd probably completely ignoring it. And so many others. He probably wasn't the only one, but it's just, I love that specific scene because it's inevitable. It's inevitable. Come on.
I've got my notes. I feel Carter's pain here. I can relate to this.
I don't know if it was this year's, the year they're showing the symposium with Carter, but I know one year he told the rookies, I always have a fall guy. If you're going to get in trouble, have a fall guy.
Oh, shit. Yeah. They cut that part.
Yeah.
Jeez, that would not have gone well in this episode.
Yeah.
Hernandez asks a question. He goes, look, how did you manage to reinvent yourself from being cut to being all pro? And I think Hernandez is worried about, obviously, on field rather than what Carter's trying to talk about, which is off field. But Carter says, look, get your stuff together before you get, I think the verb he's using is popped. And we go to 2010 training camp, and McMullen says, hey, Belichick thought the Patriots culture could police Hernandez. And we get our first Josh McDaniels sighting of the series. Love me some Josh McDaniels. Good to have him back in a Patriot program of some sort. And he says that Aaron Hernandez felt every play should be drawn up for him. Now, the downside is you can say whatever you want to say because the guy ain't here. So I don't know to what degree we're getting here. But the Pats, I mean, I'm told they revolutionized football here by coming up with a two tight end system. It did feel like no one else was doing this at the time. So I don't know if anybody's got anything beyond me on that.
I'm trying to bring it up. Like, I don't even remember. I don't even remember specifically what was the game changer though. Was it like, was it just the formation with the two tight ends?
I think it's the utilization of two tight ends on the field at the same time. I think usually, because what has to happen to put, help me out? What has to happen to put an extra tight end on? You obviously got to take. Is it a lineman you got to take off?
Yeah, that's kind of where my brain was going. Is like, I mean, it's the same amount of people. You're just better. I mean, better use. Who's the other tight end too? All I think of is Gronk right now.
It's Hernandez.
Oh, duh. Okay. So that's, again, sorry, Hernandez is like the first to me. So it's like, is one of them basically picking up the slack of the either lineman or maybe you don't do like an extra receiver. Maybe you just keep the lineman. And instead of taking an extra receiver on one side, you just bring him in.
Whereas usually you would have been choosing between wide receivers and running backs. Instead, you put a second, put a tight end on there. Because Gronk can block too. That's the thing. No one, you know, for all everything Gronk can do, Gronk's a great blocker. So you can sort of throw to Aaron Hernandez and still have the line have integrity if Gronk's on the field.
That's the better question then. Sorry, my cat just hit the microphone. Was the what was Hernandez's like strength? It shows him catching a couple times, like in the end zone and everything. What was he more known for stat wise? Was he more of like putting up a block? Was he more of like a, because he looks like a formidable guy? He was like a bigger.
I've got some stats. I've got some stats at the end, but I'm going to save some of the big ones for the end. But
For fans, like, do you remember him as like a Gronk character getting every single one of those like mid cat? Because Gronk was like notorious for like a 6, a 7 every single play.
Sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
I was going to say, I just remember him making just big catches all the time.
Hernandez?
And I feel like, and him and Gronk never really. They were both injured at different times. They never played together a whole lot.
Okay. Gronk's the guy you focused on, and then Hernandez would you'd be like, you can't. So, okay, you want to double team Gronk? I'm going to throw to Hernandez, and it would sort of become he's option B, but the option B is a hell of an option B.
Hmm. Yeah.
I remember postseason. They actually used him as a running back a fair bit, and I was actually making an argument. Hernandez should be our running back. I was like, he's one of those guys who I don't think position – it's kind of like basketball right now is going kind of positionless. I felt Aaron Hernandez was kind of this positionless football player. Like, technically, he's a tight end, but he can do a lot of stuff. He's versatile.
Yeah.
Whereas Gronk is just a matchup deficit for whoever he's up against.
I mean, Gronk was quick, though, and he was big, so he could do a lot of things. And like I said, he was in Taurus for that mid-game, like the midfield, mid yardage. My knowledge on Hernandez outside of this is so minimal. I was just
not as big, not as strong.
Raw, you know, what was it that he could bring that made it so that they could, reshape offense in the way, you know, bringing two tight ends? Like, what was it that he brought? That's all.
Okay. Ryan, anything else you want to add to that?
No. I forgot you played running back, but now that you said that, I remember, I think it was this last season.
They used him as a running back a fair bit.
Yeah, I think people were calling for the Patriots to use him more.
I wanted him to be a running back because our running game was not good. I mean, they give it to Hernandez for the odd trick play. Not trick play, because he was kind of lining up in that position, whether it was a decoy or whatever. But they'd give him the ball every now and then. I was like, the guy's really effective. Rather than doing this other version, let's just do this. So, yeah. So I remember you might not partake of this, Hermes, but Ryan, you play fantasy football.
Yes.
I had both Patriots tight ends. I got them their rookie year. The problem was you never knew which one to play.
Exactly.
Bill would throw to one, then he'd throw to the other. Oh, so you never knew which one to go for. So it didn't really help me that much. But they win 14 games that year. And we kind of yada yada over what happens at the end of that year. I guess they must lose in the divisional round or something. But the following year, they go to the Super Bowl. So Super Bowl 46, Hernandez scores a touchdown, but the Patriots lose to the Giants for the second time in 4 or 5 years. 5 years. I remember this one. This one hurt.
Yeah, in my mind, I think this is still the worst one.
Again, we're up. It's late. Again, Brady's hurt and throwing low and missing guys. Then he's limited. He's hobbling. And it's the Giants again.
And here's also where I would like to hear more about, hear from Wes Welker about this game. Like, a lot of people, he was the scapegoat in that game when he missed that one play.
I know they're not on speaking terms. But this, if they could have gotten Giselle just for her, because she famously goes, Hermes, I don't know if you remember this as well as Ryan and I must. But they asked Giselle, because she's hanging around, and it's very paparazzi style, hey, what do you think of the game, or something like that. And she goes, my husband can't catch and throw the ball, or, he can't throw the ball to himself, or something like that. And it's clearly a dig at Wes Welker, who for the longest time, it's that one where he stretches out, and he just can't bring it down.
Mm. I mean, at least she's supportive to her husband, I'll give her that, but...
she kind of buries him with the rest of the team, but yeah. Should he have had the ball, Ryan? Should that have been a catch?
Yes. First down, Patriots win.
What?
Yeah. Come on. If it's a first down, the Patriots win. Like that is the game. Yeah. That is the Super Bowl.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda, though. I mean, it's rough, especially as someone we had said in the earlier episodes, Ian, you had hands. I unfortunately did not. Too many a times did I touch it. It just, come on. There's no, my fingertips just don't have enough hand on them.
I don't know if I'm a fingertip catch guy. Yeah. I couldn't run. I really wasn't a jumper either. But if he got it anywhere around here, I just wasn't dropping it. I was just a safe pair of hands. Yeah. I was pretty good about reaching out and bringing it back into me. But yeah, coming up, going up and coming down with it, I don't know.
Well, see, maybe I just needed a Tom Brady to throw it, closer to me and hold it all fingertips.
I guess the hard part is, we'd seen Wes make that catch. We'd seen him make that catch 100 times.
Exactly.
I'm going to go one further. And I chirped this guy a lot early in his career to his Twitter account. I was a young, stupid idiot. I'll say it now. Julian Edelman makes that catch.
Yep.
He totally makes that catch.
Yeah.
Just he does.
Especially on that big stage.
Big stage. The only guy who is as big game as Tom is Julian Edelman. That's it. Simple as. They're just cut from the same cloth, those two guys. He also does the best Bill Belichick impression in all in all football. Devin McCoy. The Patriots lose, and there's a shot of Brady just sort of, he stands still, and everyone goes rushing by him. It's a great shot. And Devin McCourty says, look, we're going to be back, and next time, we're going to win it. And we go to the 2012 preseason, and Hernandez signs a big contract, but says you can't come here and act reckless. And the press is like, oh, we should have picked up on these cues. What did he mean by being reckless? I think this is such revisionist history bullcrap. He's just saying, I'm a young guy and I got to grow. Like, there's no way you look at this and go, we should have known.
It felt like they were certainly stretching, trying to find every instance they could to then stretch and be like, yeah, exactly. We should have known.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an Apple directive or if it was but it seems like, yeah, we're going to go hard against the Patriots for should have known. So you got to join in this as well. But, oh, and then we get this terrible clip of Robert Kraft talking to Bill Belichick and goes, I like Aaron. He's got a great heart and he's a good guy. And I don't know if you noticed, Bill doesn't say a thing.
Yeah.
Bill ain't talking. Ernie Adams is not the only one taking stuff to his grave. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's sitting there going, I am not justifying this with a response. And when you can't even make the head coach go, yeah, I like him. When you can't even make him say that, and he just, nothing. So Robert Kraft tells Belichick, though, that Aaron told him he needs to be careful with the people he hangs out with. And this is the narrative that Apple's going to present. That Aaron Hernandez is from Bristol, Connecticut, New England's only 2 hours down the road. It would have been better for him if he had been drafted somewhere else where his old friends couldn't have gotten to him. And I mean, there's got to be some truth in that, right? Now, could you have found a new group of bad people? Yes. Would Aaron Hernandez likely have found a new group of bad people? Yeah, I mean, maybe still yes. But would it have been the same group? No.
It's kind of where my brain goes. Is like, yeah, I mean, especially something like, I mean, murder. I mean, they say it in the beginning, so it's not like it's a spoiler here, but it's like, it's one thing to accidentally, you know, get in a bar fight and something happens outside of your control, right? But it's another thing to, as they describe execution style, like, I don't know. I feel like someone who's got that in them probably, you know, outside a very specific job that the, you know, the U.S. government or whatever government special forces, you know, allows, you're probably going down that road regardless, you know, and it's not going to, I don't know. I don't think it would have ended necessarily differently regardless of the coast.
Robert Kraft scripts out his relationship with Aaron Hernandez as a paternal relationship. I consider him to be one of my sons. This does seem to be a catchphrase that Robert Kraft comes back to. He's like another son to me. Maybe because we see the quality of who his kids are that we go, well, you know, he's looking, I get it. He's looking for, you know, before we see Robert, his kid with the dead tooth, before he comes back on again, maybe we can do something else here. But he says, look, when my wife died, he made a $50,000 donation. And he says, hey, you don't have to do this. You know, he goes, no, this is what I want to do. And Kraft, to his credit, looks down the barrel of the gun. Oh, geez, that's a bad, unintentional pun in this one. Looks down the lens of the camera and goes, he's what I thought we wanted, is the perfect Patriot player. And then we meet Brandon Lloyd. I was really excited when we got Brandon Lloyd on the Patriots. I thought he was going to be something.
Yeah, me too.
You know, maybe like, yeah, if like you got your touchdowns. If you got your Randy Moss from Wish.com, you might have got Brandon Lloyd. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And he's excited. He said, "I want to play in a playoff game." So who better than the Patriots? You know, for them it's Super Bowl or bust. I'll probably get to play in a playoff game. And he marvels at Hernandez's athletic ability. But he says, I recognize something wasn't right. There was a troubling undercurrent. And Wes Welker grabs him and says, Brandon, your locker's between Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. And yeah, Gronk's going to fall asleep. That's about it. But Aaron's going to fondle his genitalia and talk about bathing with his mom. And you got to just ignore it.
So and I do have a weird kind of story.
Okay.
This one.
Let's have it.
I worked with a guy for a few summers, a summer job, and he went to high school with Aaron Hernandez, played football with Aaron Hernandez in high school. And essentially, like, this is before all this news came out about as Aaron Hernandez was still playing, he told us the story about, like, that's what he would do in the locker room even in high school. So this stuff, when I heard this on the documentary, I was still shocked to hear somebody else say this. But again,
so, seeing the documentary and hearing someone validate the story you heard at a summer job.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. Are you showing up for episode 5, like week 5? Is that going to happen? Is it going to be you on the stool? Are you next?
Yeah.
And it was like Wes has just seen a ghost, and then we meet Wes Welker, the pint-sized man himself. And he says, hey, look, I thought Chico was a good kid, but I thought it was pretty glaring there were issues. And Brandon Lloyd talks about Hernandez just raging out, shouting, I will kill you. And I think it's at this point he says, look, we're in a football locker room. We get away with saying a lot of stuff that you couldn't get away with saying in any other walk of life. And right then, like, the B-rolls catching, you know, Aaron Hernandez talking about how they gangbanged him or something like that. And it's just, you know, proof into the pudding. But Brandon Lloyd says that after telling us, first off, but, you know, when someone says they're going to kill me, I take that kind of seriously. Hindsight added to it. Brandon Lloyd says that Dion Branch was the Aaron Hernandez whisperer and used by Belichick to do that very thing. And we get told stories of how Hernandez would, you know, call Belichick daddy. and would have Tom Brady raging against him in a play going, like, get him off the field. What's he doing here? And he was the problem kid in the class who the teacher would just try and ignore and hope he went away. Because that's how you deal with Aaron. So Brady says, you know, I would yell at him. And then, or I think it's a story that Tom would, but they have, it looks like they have footage of this exact practice. And Brady's yelling at Hernandez, and Hernandez is yelling back at Brady, and Bill's just ignoring it. He walks the other way like nothing's going. I don't want to deal with this.
I was very surprised that Belichick just let that slide.
I was very surprised because he comes off as weak. He comes off and Hernandez is running the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to your point of talent and maybe, you know, there's some compromise here. I don't disagree with you, but again, I don't trust Apple entirely in their narrative.
Agreed. I just think it's about losing face. So there's one thing about compromises you make. But as I often say, you know, it's not about the kid doing it. It's about the other kids who are watching him do it and learning that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to lose face because when I got to be Bill Belichick and go, I don't want to have to call your mom Castle. I don't want him going, it's okay, you don't have to call my mom because you're my new daddy. I don't need him to do that. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and then Wes Welker talks about, hey, I'm back to return a punt. And, you know, and Aaron Hernandez is going, why am I not returning the punts? I'm the best punter. And he's effing and jeffing, and Belichick's just laughing him off. And Welker says, it's amazing what winning will make you overlook. Because these become events that you look the other way, and then you win a few games, and you hope it goes away, and it lays a bit dormant, and then it blows up again. Off the field, Brandon Lloyd tells us, look, I was told, he's our teammate, but do not go hang out with Chico. Literally, for your own safety, is the instructions he's told. So his argument here is, someone knew. And, yeah.
Again, I think you got that in you. I don't, yeah.
I'll tell you what, like Brandon Lloyd looks proper scared. Brandon Lloyd, say what you will about the Apple narrative. Brandon Lloyd looks like, yeah, he's not looking to hold any punches here. He's telling his version. And we get June 17th, 2013, breaking news on the death of Odin Lloyd. Police finds an SUV that leads them to Aaron Hernandez. What are you doing leaving a vehicle at the scene?
Yeah, I wish there was a little more information on some of this stuff. I mean, yeah, I can do research further, and yeah, I'd be curious to see what comes up, but I wish there was just a little bit more because, yeah, it was just sort of like, we're going to frame it this way. We're going to give you the information we want you to know so that we can tell the story we want. And that's it. You know, and I had a lot of questions.
We get told that Hernandez broke his security system and smashed his cell phone into pieces. That won't be the only time we'll hear about a cell phone getting smashed in this series, I think.
That was my thought when I heard that.
Aaron Hernandez then flees to Gillette Stadium as sanctuary, and Robert Kraft approaches him. And Kraft says, I will get you the best defense lawyer on my dime. And he says, look, I'm sure if you did it, you must have had a good reason. To which point I'm like, Robert Kraft, where is your line? Yeah. What is the reason? Anyway, he says, no, he looked me in the eye and said, I did not do it. And he says, he changed my life and how I look at people. To this day, I can't believe I got snookered like that. Oh, so yeah, Robert Kraft's a bit more jaded. 7 days later, Hernandez is arrested, and Kraft wants to drop Hernandez instantly, and Belichick pushes back a bit. And yeah, innocent until proven guilty. I hear you. The suggestions on if the Patriots knew anything and looked the other way. 4 weeks later, Belichick has a press conference, says it's time for the team to move forward and be a team the fans can be proud of. We're told that Aaron Hernandez became dead to the Patriots. No one speaks about him. We're moving on. And then the Boston Globe spends a year diving into his life. And we get told a year earlier, at a club in downtown Boston. They go outside, him and a buddy of his who deals drugs, and they kill two guys in a car with 8 to 10 shots. And then they then escape law enforcement. And I'm like, holy smokes, I don't remember this. Mm-mm. And then Hernandez goes to Belichick and says, hey, my girlfriend's life and my daughter's life are in jeopardy. Can we be traded? And Belichick Belichick is not coming out looking good here. Yeah. He gets refused. Belichick's asked about it now and goes, direct quote, it's an unfortunate situation about Aaron, and I don't have anything to add about it. Yeah. Belichick. Go ahead.
In defense of Belichick and this whole situation, when Jonathan Kraft is talking about how, you know, he wanted to drop Hernandez right away, which they did within an hour of him being arrested.
Yeah.
There's a couple things. Like, when he first got arrested, nobody knew what it was actually for until he was brought into court later that day. And also, just business-wise, if they didn't release him right away and he's suspended or in jail, he can't play, it means they don't have to pay him. So the way the Patriots did it, they cut him right away. They owed him all the guaranteed money up until 2020.
Okay.
They had a salary cap every year.
Okay, so there's some football ink, as they put it,
in play here.
Belichick never explains why he doesn't trade him, but I think it's obvious. And no one ever knows why Hernandez kills Odin Lloyd, we're told. April 15th, 2015, Hernandez hears the sentence. Doesn't seem to react. Now, you could read into that he's projecting strength. You don't want to look scared because you're about to go into jail, so you don't want to project fear at all. Dion Branch, they go back to him, the Chico Whisperer, and he is like he's seen a ghost. In closing, Ernie Adams suggests there's no way we could have known. He said the best thing for Aaron Hernandez would have been drafted to Seattle. Robert Kraft apologizes for anyone who was harmed by the actions of the team. We get told that on April 19, 2017, Hernandez died by suicide in prison at the age of 27. He was acquitted of the 2012 Boston nightclub murders. His friend was never charged. I think Apple TV's misrepresented themselves here. Because when top of the Boston Globes, they run that like it's legit and then just chicken out with a chyron at the end by saying, yeah, by the way, he was acquitted. He didn't do it. Because they show you what looks like footage and them driving away and going, oh, here's what it is. In which case, what's that footage of?
Yeah.
Again, yeah, like structuring the narrative the way they did. I don't know.
Well, also, again, they showed his first, you know, verdict when he was found guilty. That second verdict when he was not guilty of the double homicide, he got very emotional. And at that same time, that first conviction was under appeal.
Yes.
And that's why, like, 5 days later, he killed himself.
Yeah, it was a really big surprise, wasn't it?
He was technically not guilty of that first murder because it was, at the time, vacated.
Yeah, it came off.
And once you're dead and you're not guilty. And then I think years later, the Massachusetts Supreme Court reversed that again. So he is technically the killer in that and guilty of that.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember when he died, it felt like sort of things were pushing the other direction. And not that he was ever going to come back and play football or anything like that, but
yeah.
And then you found that he died, and you're like, "This, wow!" It was a bit out there.
Yeah.
They talk a lot about Hernandez. They don't talk at all about Gronk after he gets drafted. He's just kind of Apple TV. He's there, but nothing. I did some stats because the program suggests to me, I'd argue that Hernandez is the better statistical player based on what they're saying. It's not the case. They're both very good. Hernandez, over three seasons, has 175 catches. Gronk has 187. Hernandez comes 1,956 yards. Gronk has 2,663 yards. And the big one, though, over three seasons, Hernandez has 18 touchdowns, which is a good total. Over three seasons, 18 touchdowns, more than respectable. Gronk has 38 touchdowns. And it's the same 3 years because they're both drafted the same year. So, Hernandez's best season, he almost goes for 1,000 yards and gets 7 touchdowns. That same season, the same calendar year, Gronk goes for 1,327 yards and 17 touchdowns. It was that season. So what was the appeal of it? You can't cover them both. That's what it is. So fine, if you do cover Gronk, fine. Put two guys on Gronk. Hernandez is wide open. That's the appeal.
They don't. Yeah,
we'll get you either way.
Yeah,
and that's the year which it's. Yeah, that's the Giants. Yeah, it's the Giants. So, yeah, what a crazy year. Is that the Giants or is it the 14-2 season? I can't remember now. 11's the Giants. So 10 is the 14-2 year. Sorry, it's the 14-2 year. Where they, I think they're losing the AFC Championship to Indy.
The divisional round to the Jets. The Jets.
Was it the Jets? Okay.
Yeah, it's in the divisional round.
I've blocked that one from my brain. So I remember feeling very sad. 14-2. All right. I haven't done that. Oh, this will be fun. I haven't done any of my own post game stuff here. So who's getting the game ball? Who's the MVP of the episode? Oh, this is the only episode we don't get a teaser for the next episode. Almost always they give you a hint. Not this time. We're just going to let this sit. Who's getting the game ball? Feels weird to say it on this one, but who's getting it?
Probably Dion, because he was the main person in this one telling the stories.
I gave it to Dion as well because, yeah, for a lot of reasons. But yeah,
is there a single sound? Is there a single talking head of Tom Brady about Hernandez at all? I don't think he's in this episode. Do you think that's by accident? Do you think it's a coincidence?
I doubt anything by accidents and something like that.
I think Tom Brady's saying, I ain't going on the Aaron Hernandez episode.
Yeah.
I'm not being linked with him. I'm obviously game, but I'm going Dion Branch as well. Yeah. Honorable mention, Brandon Lloyd.
Yeah.
Who fumbled the ball? Should we go besides Hernandez? Is he too odd? He's an obvious pick, isn't he?
Yeah.
So who fumbled the ball?
I said Kraft with the he was a good guy and he was like kind of bad. I mean, I don't know. To one side, it's like, okay, back your players. But at the other side, it's just like, I don't know. There's got to be a limit where you're just like, come on. It's too many.
Because he smiled and kissed me on the cheek. Like, there's more than that to a man's character. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'll go Kraft too, because he seemed like he was the Hernandez supporter. He was the one who wanted to give him that contract. Hmm. You look at Belichick, he's just spinning his whistle around.
For the second straight episode, I'm going to go Belichick. Although I totally get Kraft. When Belichick won't say anything back to him, I think that the damning thing about Kraft is what he says. The damning thing about Belichick is what he's not saying. Now, is that all inferential? Yeah. Yeah, it is. And maybe am I maybe just playing into what Apple TV wants me to? Yeah, maybe. Maybe if he called that shot 2 seconds later, he goes, man, he was around playing with my kids. What a great guy. Yeah, it's possible. But I think that's mine. Highlight of the night. This is going to be a hard one. Is there a story or something?
Probably just that Gronk story when he was in trouble with the Patriots 5 minutes into being a Patriot.
I put down seeing the second wave come in, like that whole draft set of scenes was pretty good. It just sucks that Hernandez was part of, like, drug it down, basically.
My highlight, not in the way of the most powerful one for me. I'll do that one instead as my highlight. It's Robert Kraft confronting Aaron Hernandez in the weight room. That story where, like, he appears he's in the building, goes down and checks on him, and says, he lied right to my face. I think that's a really powerful story there. Best soundbite, Omaha, Omaha.
Wasn't it like the opening sentence by Dion Branch? He should have seen it. Or was that the closing? I want to say I wrote it down pretty early, so I want to say it was towards the beginning. Yeah. And that one stuck with me for the entire episode. And afterwards, it stuck out as like the most because you can't see the future. Nobody can see, like he said, even he admits, like, you can only know what you see. You know, you can't really know a person all the way to the core. You just know what you see. And yet he still has the guilt. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot.
Yeah. It's right at the start. Ryan.
Yeah.
I'll go with Kraft at the very end when he said, you know, we bought this team to make a difference in the community, and we didn't this time. And he apologizes.
I'm glad you said that, because I didn't get that first part about we bought this to try and make our community better, and in this case, we didn't. Yeah. I went miserable with my highlight of a night. I'll go positive. I'll go... I've been a Patriot for 5 minutes. I'm already in trouble. Already Belichick, God help us. One of those two, but yeah. them having to spell out the name, because it's how do you say this name? And they have to spell out Gronkowski. I thought it was great. Check your programs. Who is the person here you weren't expecting to see?
Wes Welker. I think, like I said before, I wanted him two episodes ago. So to see him now come into this situation as he's, you know, at the end of Hernandez's time with the Patriots, he's already gone. And here he comes in this episode.
Yeah. No, I agree with that, especially because with such a dark episode, him being the levity of it was nice to see, at least.
I almost want to reverse this one and say I almost want to give it to Tom Brady for not being on the episode. Wait, shouldn't he be playing? I've got my roster card. Tom's healthy. There's no John Bon Jovi this week, you don't say. Brandon Lloyd. I wasn't expecting to see him. And, I thought there was something in that. Because it's the only bit he's going to get in this documentary. He's gone by the time the Patriots win again, I think. Is he?
I think he's only here for a year or two.
Yeah. So, I'm going to go Brandon Lloyd on that one. I was not expecting to see him sit down in the chair. So, there we are. Surely this has to be the end of... hang on, there's one more scandal to go. But I don't think it's next week. I hope it's not next week.
The fact that they go... Because I know which one you're referring to. The fact they go from this to that, that seems kind of like... You really just want to pick on the Patriots sometimes.
Where are we at here? Oh, no. Next episode's Deflategate.
Yeah.
And then we get three episodes kind of closing it all out. So, but the next one's Deflategate.
It'd probably be funny then. Maybe they'll spin it as a funny, to turn it into the comedic realm after this one. Sort of like, this is the next thing we actually got them for. Isn't it crazy that
it's better if they're choosing to end the week with it and just let it sit and then have a week and then we just pick it right back up. We don't have that overlap that if you went episode 5, 6. Then the whole time you're watching 6, you're like, I can't move past 5. I just can't. So, yeah, so it feels like a downer because it is a downer of an episode, isn't it?
Yeah, very much.
Oh, I'm trying to think of some sort of – I want to, in the core of what it is that we do here, sort of try and bring the energy level back up and go, hey, and let's go with how we feeling about – but it's not that kind of episode. It's just one of those – sometimes real life comes into things like football or things like podcasting and going it doesn't wrap itself up. Life doesn't always wrap itself up in this nice, tidy timeline. And this one's, this one's lingering.
All the more reason they probably structured it the way they did, and why we're nitpicking how they, had to frame a bad guy so bad, certain things. So the way they did, it's because life isn't like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always discovered lunch is a great thing to do at this point. I've been to Auschwitz and I've been to Ground Zero. And in both cases, you carried this because, it's a holiday. Holidays are, hey, it's fun. It's this. And, hey, we're doing this. And then you have this moment where real life enters your holiday, these big things. And you go, oh, ooh, carrying that. And it's amazing what some lunch can do. And you just sort of get a chance to reset, recalibrate, and then you move on. And
good advice.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, life for the good and for the bad, but more so for the good. Life goes on. So such is. Man, I'm trying to think of a way to not end this on a downer. Hermes, I said off mic. I thought you're a fairly optimistic fellow. What you got?
No. No. It's okay to end it on a downer. I mean, like, because yeah, this is something that happened, and it's okay to feel a certain way about it, like you said. And let's have a meal, go have a night or a week to recover, sleep it off, and then come back with to me is a hilarious next week or next controversy to have with the Patriots.
Ryan, what are you going to be more angry about? Do you anticipate Spygate or Deflategate?
Deflategate.
I'm going to be more angry about Deflategate. Absolutely. Yeah. Deflategate is such a load of crap.
I have so much to say next episode.
The Patriots put up like 50 points. Like, yeah. No, they ran the ball. I guess the game they run it down their throats too. I might be wrong on that one, but
no, they ran for like 300 yards.
Yeah, that game. That's not improved by taking a little bit of air out of the ball.
Yeah,
MythBusters had a whole episode about it.
Well, if you've seen that, like, you can bring that to the table next week because I do not know. That would be fantastic because I've always been I know it plays into the narrative of the great cheater Patriots, but. I do not know what the benefit of that would be. Even when Michael Jordan came out and said, look, we used to be on the bench. We'd take the ball and sort of put a pin in it and take a little bit of air out of it. It's what we did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Bunch of anti-Boston crybabies. That's all I'm going to say about that.
They're running out of stuff. They're running out of things to nitpick, I guess.
Yeah. Can you imagine if Twitter was more than, like, it was closer to what it is today than what it was then?
Do you think Deflategate would have been bigger, or is that what you're theorizing here?
Yeah, I'm inflating that Deflategate would have been inflated. Yeah,
I think it was pretty big on Twitter at the time. Like that's, was it? Yeah, I think for all the news kind of broke there, and all the discourse started there.
I suppose
I remember hearing about it, and I assume it would have been from Twitter.
Yeah. So it really started the one. I think that Chris Mortensen tweet. R.I.P. Chris Mortensen. But there's that one tweet about the deflated balls that night.
Big hashtags, too.
So there we deflated. Go.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll wrap this up there. We'll look ahead. They didn't do it. We did. And it lets us look ahead. And it's a little bit – surprisingly, the deflating has buoyed the energy at the end of the pod. So that there we have it. Thank you, Tom Brady. Thank you for your smash cell phone. And thank you for one Super Bowl ring for each of those fragments from your phone. I appreciate that. So please catch us next week when we talk about the Deflategate and winning some more Super Bowls. It's been a minute, so we'll talk about that. So please join us next time for everything we're doing here on the BFE. Go check us out on what used to be called Twitter, now X. If you're so inclined, at Bessemer for Pod, go check out the Scuttlebutt podcast for all the goodness that Hermes didn't mention in his anti pitch earlier. And go check out Ryan doing whatever Ryan's doing out there in the public world. plug. That's about it. More importantly, come check us out next week as we go ahead and take a look at Deflategate for best film ever.
I've been Ryan.
And I've been Hermes.
And one more time, Ryan, if you'd help me out, because we got to tell people that we'll catch them on the flippity-flap.
The flippity-flip-flop.